this exact week. About 40 years ago. It was this exact week. Parshat Pechukosai was coming up. And Am Yisrael was all of a sudden threatened by a number of countries that surround it. And Parshas Pechukosai did not console anyone. If the back is going to be disturbing, then please don't sit there. And the question became, what will happen to the Jewish people? Everyone was feeling threatened, so much so that there was a sick joke that went like this. Last one out, please turn off the lights. And the idea was that we survived the Holocaust just to now face our deaths. 48 was real, it was a good time, but now it's over. The Chevra Kadisha went ahead and sanctified all the public land around the country because they had to prepare the burial plots for 2 million Jews. In America, they started a collection for the survivors, and in Israel, they called up United States Jewry, and they said to whoever was leading the efforts, don't bother, if we lose, it's over. There won't be any survivors. And there was a dim picture. Didn't look good. The Prime Minister, Levi Eshkol, got on the radio and he tried to calm everybody down and he says to the entire country, it's going to be okay. We're going to see this through. There are nations that wish to devour us and they wish to devour us and there are a lot of them. There aren't so many of us. And he flipped out right then and there on public radio, said, we're going to die, and I'm sorry, but I can't lie to you. We're done. The Prime Minister of Israel. That was Thursday. Thursday night, Friday, there's not much going on. Just everybody's scared. And finally, on Shabbos morning, when they bring out the Torah and start reading Parshas Bechukosai, the Tochacha, this is what happens when you don't keep the mitzvot properly. They said, that's it, it's over. The Tochacha? And there's war? And Hashem says, I'm going to wipe you out, throw you out of the land? It's over. And lo and behold, Monday morning, at 8 in the morning, Egypt declares war on Israel. I heard a story from Rav Nachman Kahana. He was living in Netanya at the time. He was thinking, war is declared. They go, they run into their bunkers. They're listening to the radio. And there were two stations, the Jordanian station and the Israeli station. That was Israeli radio back in the day. They turn on the Jordanian station. We've now taken over the whole south. We're heading north. Turn on the Israeli station. There's nothing at all. Turn back to the Jordanian station. We've taken over the whole Negev. We're now going to get to Tel Aviv momentarily. Israeli station. More musica. That's fine. And he's kind of waiting. So one of those missiles coming from Jordan, those jet planes, Jordan to Netanya, jet, takes about 60 seconds. We should be hearing booms any minute. And they're waiting. And waiting. And he described it as a very long 2 hours until finally on the Israeli station at 10 a.m. they gave over some news. That at 5 a.m. that morning, the Israeli planes took off and basically wiped out Egypt's airports, Jordan, Syria. Unbelievable. The war is miraculous. One step after the other. It was one incredible list of miracles. One of my favorites is not as well known, when Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cohen Cook in 1967 on Yom HaTzmaut evening, he goes onto his porch. Everyone was gathered around his porch outside, just like they did every year. He would deliver his Yom HaTzmaut speech, and then they would go dancing in the streets. Well, that year in 1967, that is not what took place. Everyone gathered, they were waiting, and Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cohen Cook goes out onto his balcony and says, 19 years ago in 1948, when they declared Israel a state, you all danced, I cried. And he did cry. He cried bitterly until Rav Aryeh Levin came, held his hand, and they cried together. And after a few hours, they decided there is what to rejoice about. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda starts screaming in 1967, Yom HaTzmaut. He says, they've divided my land! Hebron, have we forgotten about that? Yericho! They've divided my land, our Golan Heights! Where's that? Yerushalayim! And he named one place after the other that 1 month later we'd won. Rav Benny Eisner will be davening in his home, Be'ezrat Hashem, very soon. Rav Benny Eisner goes. He was one of the commanders to liberate Beit Lechem. And he goes to Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook after the war and he says, Rav Benny, Harav, Eich Yadata, how'd you know? And Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cohen Cook responds to Rav Benny and he says, Benny, I did not know. Nidbarti. Now, if you know Hebrew, dibarti would mean I spoke. The nun at the beginning makes it passive, nifal. Nidbarti would then mean I was spoken through. I did not know. That is 1967. Last year, if you want to go down the list of Sichot in the archives, last year I focused on the miracles that took place in Jordan, in Syria, in Egypt, in the whole battle, 6 days, and then they rested on the seventh. It's very biblical in nature. A beautiful war. One of those that in West Point they don't teach because it's just too miraculous. No one really understands how this took place. The most unlikely defeat. However, tonight I would like to focus on something else. Something that the Gemara tells us. Tzarech chizuk tamid. It needs strengthening tamid, all the time. You know what it means to need strengthening all the time? It means that by nature, we lose interest, we lose motivation, and we need someone to come along and push us. Because we forget. I was motivated a day ago, but today I'm not, and I need someone to help push me. I was motivated a month ago, I was motivated 3 months ago, but I fell. And I need someone to push me. That's what it means. Srichen chizuk tamid. There are four things that the Gemara lists. I'm going to focus on one of the four. One that was definitely a focus during 1967. And I'll explain with a beautiful analogy. The four are Torah, we fall out of motivation, and we need a push. Two, Derech Eretz. And there, Derech Eretz means work. Fascinatingly, we get sick of our work, of our employment, and you need a push. Masim tovim, good deeds. We get sick of doing the good deeds. Maybe someone else can do the good deeds for once. Why do I have to do the good deeds? And you need a push. And the last one, tefillah, prayer. And that's the one I'd like to speak about. Prayer. So many of us, we go through that feeling where we push ourselves, we encourage ourselves to just get up, go, do this. We're motivated to pray, and then we lose interest. And I'm pretty sure that that's true because Friday night, there are many more people at tefillah than there are Shabbos day. On Shabbos, there are many more people at tefillah than there are during the weekdays. And I'm not talking about just here in Leva Torah. I'm talking about worldwide. This is something that goes on. How many minyanim are there? How many rooms are filled in your congregations, in your communities, for the Shabbat minyanim? And how many minyanim are there in rooms filled during the week? Probably a lot less. So in other words, you're 18, 19, struggling perhaps, but when you're 28 and 38 and 48, I can guarantee that the struggles are still there. And there are plenty of dads who also are struggling. They just can't do it. And maybe they're not in yeshiva, and maybe they don't have rabbanim who will continue to give them this chizuk, that push, that encouragement. Come on, dad, it's time to go back to daven. And therefore, I think that it's worthy of being addressed in this forum. And there's one thing before I launch into the topic that I want to point out. The idea that it feels comfortable when I miss davening. I went to sleep and I slept through it. I decided today I'll experiment with myself. I'll feel how it feels. I'd like to see how it feels when I miss a davening. So I sat there in my room and I missed davening. How did it feel? Yeah, it felt okay. Didn't miss it. So that must be proof that I shouldn't bother. It's not proof. Mesillas Yesharim says, unfortunately, that's proof of something else. That if you do something once, you feel a little bad. You do something twice, you feel a little bad. You do something three times, it's just uncomfortable to feel bad. It becomes somewhat mutter in your eyes. It becomes permissible. It's not so bad. I'd like to add another nuance to that, being that naturally, we're very happy to do nothing. Naturally, we are not in, we don't love being pushed and pushing ourselves. Unless it's something that we naturally love. The fact that you don't naturally love to daven, that's not a big chiddush. That's not a blow away, and therefore I shouldn't daven. It just means it's natural. But if I could convey a very, very important point. Everybody here is expected to be a little bit above nature. You're not supposed to be natural. We are the people with Hashem. That's not natural. It's not natural to win a war against all odds repeatedly. It's not natural to exist and be here after the thousands of years of persecution. Our existence is not natural. We are the people of eight. On our eighth day, we get a bris milah because we're above nature. And therefore, I encourage all of us to try to rise above that moment when we say, but I am just a human. When you tell yourself that phrase, I am just human, what you're saying is, I am limited. I cannot do and I cannot rise above a certain level. But you really can. Pokeach Ivre means opening the eyes of the blind. Matir Asurim is to untie the bound. How many times are we blinded by what we really could do? How many times are we bound by chains that aren't real and are just figments of our imagination? We could probably undo those chains and uncover the blinders. So we have to set our eyes on much greater sights, on much greater accomplishments, because we could do it. We could probably overcome those urges to stay in bed. It's not that tough. And we can overcome the urges to just do nature. Emirat Hashem, when we all have to go to work starting at about 6:30, 7 in the morning, all of a sudden that hour on the clock won't look so early. But right now, I know it feels like the earliest time in the world is whatever time it is to daven. So if davening is at 8, that's the, or I can't believe I have to get up with a 7 on the clock. A 7 on the clock, I've been up for 2 hours. That's a ridiculously late time. And it's not me, because I'm great. I don't think I have a friend who doesn't get up at an early hour. When you're married and you have children, you get up early. You have things to do. My father did that. My mom did that. All the people I know, all my friends and colleagues do that. That's what you do when you're a working man. So I get up a little bit earlier because I also have davening. It's not that early. I know it feels early. It's just an urge. We can overcome it because we can be great. And I want to talk a little bit about this idea of tefillah, what it is and how important it is. Because maybe through addressing it, we can understand how critical it is, and this will be our encouragement, our chizuk, our strengthening that we need. It says in Gemara Brachos, Dvarim omdim berumo shel olam, zlut b'bnei adam, comes from Perek Yud Bet in Tehillim, the last line of Perek Yud Bet, krum zlut l'bnei adam. What's krum zlut l'bnei adam? Kirum, things that are like room, ramu umignase, things that are lofty in heaven, zlut are garbage, b'nei adam, in the eyes of man. What is lofty in heaven that God deems so valuable, but man, unfortunately, doesn't see how valuable it is? Rashi, kagon, two words, Rashi, kagon, tefillah. Tefillah is that. Rashi doesn't say like Torah, like Masim Tovim, Chesed. There's one example Rashi gives for something that God thinks is the most important thing, and we have not yet understood how important it is. Tefillah. It says in Parshas B'Shalach, the Jewish people are running away. The Egyptians say, go. The Jews say, don't have to tell us twice. And they go. And they are running away. They're clapping, they're singing, they're dancing their way out of Egypt. Everything is great. We love God. We love Moses. We're on our way. And they're singing the bye-bye song to Egypt. They get to the river. And they're now thinking, okay, we can go left. They turn to the left. Ah! There are lions to the left. We could turn right. And there were problems to the right. We could turn straight. Then we drown. I guess we could turn right. Oh no! It looks like them. They're coming after us. V'hikrivu Mitzrayim lava. And the Egyptians came close. But if we read that carefully, we'll notice it's not v'karvu Mitzrayim. The Egyptians got close, neared, but rather v'hikrivu, there's something causative. Something is pushing the Egyptians, lavo, to come near Bnei Yisrael. What is that force that is pushing the Egyptians? It's just translation of the word. What is the Torah talking about? So the Medrash says the following. Lema davar doma. What's this similar to? A mashal. I'll give you a story, the Gemara says. There's this damsel in distress, this girl, and she's in trouble. And this prince, an actual prince, the son of a king, sees this girl in trouble and she's about to die, and he goes, he's on his beautiful horse, and he saves her, swoops her up, throws her on the back of the horse, and she says, "You saved me, you saved me." He says, "I know." And she's a pretty girl, and he's thinking, and she's thinking, "Wow, I'm safe." He's thinking, you know, maybe I could ask her to marry me, but I don't know, that would be a little forward. I just saved her, she just went through a traumatic event, so maybe I'll just bring her to the palace, and we'll wait a few days. So he brings her to the palace. Listen, there is a change of clothes in the left. The whole left wing is yours. There are butlers waiting to serve you food. There's a dining room, all the clothes you want, bedroom, piano, there's a music room, there's a weight room, there's a gym, everything you want. Left wing, it's yours. Just thank you. don't worry about it. She's over there in the left wing. He's thinking, okay, now that I've given her a good time, it's time to pop the question, see if she's interested. We could go on a date. I'm the prince. So he sends a message, and the messenger comes back. "Prince, we're really sorry, but the princess has responded that she's busy and she does not have time to meet with you." "She's busy? What's she doing?" He said, "Well, she said that she's trying on dresses now and cannot be bothered." "Oh, okay. I'll try again tomorrow." So the next day he sends a messenger for this lady. "Would you mind coming to meet with me? I'd like to see you and speak." She sends back a message. "I'm so sorry. I'm very busy. I decided to take up philosophy courses, and I'm studying. I'm in the library. I just don't have time." Wow. So he gathers all his officers. Get around the table. You know what this means, men, right? They're like, "Yeah. It's gonna mean that. Tomorrow, at exactly 3:00, we're gonna stage a problem. And I'll go riding on my horse. And she's out playing tennis, and exactly at 3:00, there's a little bit of a problem. The prince comes marching on in, riding on in on his horse. He knocks over all his officers, and he saves her, throws her on the back of the horse. "You saved me, you saved me." He says, "I know, would you marry me?" And the Midrash concludes. Kadosh Baruch Hu, he says, "Here, Am Yisrael, go." And they leave the singing and dancing. "Thank you." And now they're out. Then Hashem says, "Hey, you want to talk? No thanks, we got this one. You want to talk? We're good. Don't eat anything. Thank you anyway." V'hikrivu Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Shemayim, he arranged it. "You don't talk to me anymore? Fine, I'll make sure that you talk to me." And he arranges the Egyptians to come and close in on them. So now they scream out, "Hey, that's what I was looking for. Thank you." So Rabbi Yerucham Lubavitch asks Akasha. He says, "I don't understand something in this Mashal and Nimshal. In the Nimshal, we've got God wanting to hear the Jewish people. In the story, you have the prince who doesn't want to just speak to this girl. He wants to marry her. The goal is not just to speak. Talk is cheap. He wants marriage. What does God want from us? He just wants to hear us. Why? Because we're in trouble. If we're in trouble, we'll call out. If we're not in trouble, we won't call out. So don't call it, don't trouble. The whole point was just to get us out of trouble, to call out so we won't be in trouble. So don't put us in trouble. We won't have to call out, we're even. What's the goal? Just to hear us say, please save us? Why? Just don't put us in a bad predicament in the first place. So I want to explain something really beautiful that Rabbi Yerucham says. And everybody should understand this. We view tefillah so often as a means to an end. I want ice cream. God, can you please supply it? And he either says yes or no. If he says yes, that was a good prayer. God, I'd like knowledge. If I make it through the test, I do well. Score. If I don't, oh well, I guess he said no. However, that's when you use tefillah as a means to an end. Maybe the whole point of tefillah is intimacy. Because the calling out, Hashem, Hashem, I'm with you. I just want to talk to you. Having the opportunity to go through a difficult situation reminds us that someone's there and we should be speaking to that person all the time. Oh, that's right. I forgot. I want to be talking to Hashem regularly. I was in 2007, I was flying to America yet once again on one of those trips. But this time in 2007, the yeshiva was not welcome to continue its lease up the hill, and the building here was not yet finished. Our existence was simply on the line. And we did not have the money to fund the rest of the construction. So you can't continue building. We're running out of money to build it. But we don't really have a backup option. So it's just going to have to happen. The amount that I saw that we had to raise in order to make this happen, that we would continue to exist, was a staggering number, at least for me. It was larger than a number that I had raised until that point. So the entire flight I spent saying to him, I barely slept. 12 hours till. There was a non-religious girl going off, leaving Israel happily. She wanted to become a movie star in New York. An Israeli girl. And she was watching a movie, and she fell asleep, and she woke up, and she noticed I was still saying Tehillim. That's all you've been doing, is just saying that? That's it? What are you doing? I said, well, I've got something pretty important, and I'm not really sure what's going to be in a month from now. And therefore, Tehillim is exactly what I need to be doing. And the story goes, we had a Shabbaton, a New Jersey Shabbaton, in Teaneck, and some very, very close family friend, he became a very close family friend, close friend of the yeshiva, they lived near where the Shabbaton was being held in Teaneck, New Jersey. And I figured it would be a great idea if I invite him to the Shabbaton. That would be such a wonderful idea. Let him come and join the davening. Let him see the dancing. Let him see a beautiful tefillah. It was great. And I told him davening in Teaneck, New Jersey, on a summer day, is called for 5:45 because, as you know, the yeshiva does it halachically, where it surrounds Plag HaMincha. So we're going to have to do it really early. Like, that's really very early? Yeah, it is. Whatever. Okay. And he comes. There's one problem. One major error. He was a Yekki. And that means that he was always on time, if not early. Well, 5:45, the only thing that was going on in this little Beis Medrash that we were using, Leva Torah style, hugs, was the only thing on the radar. Another alum comes, and another alum, Mincha was just not even on the radar. And he was sitting there as of 5:45. I got there personally at 6, and I was, I think, the sixth person there. And he was sitting there. And everybody else for the next 20, 30 minutes was coming in just for a hug. Plaga Mincha went way out the window. We relied on the same leniency all of America does. And everything's just great. And then Kabbal Shabbos starts. We get through Mincha. We get a great chazan, Rav Mo. And in classic style, about 30 seconds into Kabbal Shabbos, the first dance erupts. And they're going around, and I'm thinking, wow, this is just bad. This is not going right. He gets into the circle. He was on the far right. The door was there. He gets into the circle, goes in the circle, and out the door. Gone. My big donor. Big friend. Gone. He then, about 30 minutes later, comes back. Pops his head into the door. Rav Boaz was speaking. 1 minute. Leaves. Doesn't like the fact that we're late. Doesn't particularly care for dancing. And didn't like the Rosh Yeshiva speech. I'm done. I think this relationship, I guess, is over. I figured I might as well try to say good Shabbos to him. His house isn't so far from the shul. We were eating in the shul. Between davening and eating, I run to his house. I want to just say good Shabbos. I knock on the door. They open the door, and I realize their entire family is there. It is like 5 children, each with families. There's a lot of kids, a lot of people. Hello? I didn't mean to walk in on your party. I just wanted to say good Shabbos. Matzei Shabbos. We have a concert. I get back to my home at 1 a.m. and I have a missed message. Missed call. Listen to the message. It's this individual. And he says, I'd like to speak to you. Please call me immediately in the morning. Great. He's going to read me the right act. I'm done. Why'd you wrote me into Leva Torah? I don't really like what you guys are doing. I could read what's going to happen already. I call him in the morning. I go to his house. He sits me down in his office. And he says to me, I was there on time. He's like, I know. And no mincha happened. I know. And the only thing that was going on for about a half hour was hugs. I know. Said, in all the yeshiva Shabbatons I've ever been to, I've never in my life seen such camaraderie. Is that a normal thing? The Rabbeim and the students with each other and different years? Yeah, that's pretty normal by us. Said, I'm ready to name the Beis Medrash. Mr. Blumenfeld's name, Zichrono Tzadik Livracha, his name is on the Beis Medrash when you walk in. Tefillah is everything. I can't say it enough times that it's not about me. When I tell these stories, it's not that you should say, oh, that's that Qualwasser guy. He's got those special powers. It's you. Because when you call out to the Ribbono Shalom, I'm calling out, Ribbono Shalom, I want to speak to you. It's intimate. What you care about is what I care about. And I will end with the following analogy. When you get married, there's something disastrous that takes place, but that is critical as a building block towards developing a normal marriage. The disaster that takes place, the disaster could be anywhere from a minute to an eternity. You go out with a girl, and basically she represents something in life. You decide you like that. You get married and you realize that that is not true. The whole thing was fictitious. Because everything bad, you just kind of like, you assumed wasn't really that bad. I bet it won't be so prominent in her personality. I bet she's not really like that. And all the good that you wish for, you look for signs, and the second it appears there, it gets hinted at. You're like, yeah, there it is. In other words, what you are falling in love with is a figment of your imagination. You have created this image, and you fell in love with a virtual individual. You get married and you realize that that individual doesn't actually exist, at least not in the form of your wife. And now you've got yourself a problem. All those things I didn't want, they're right there. All those things you thought you wanted, hey, where'd they go? They're not there. So what happens? And there's one little trick that I'm going to teach you that is the make it or break it for every single relationship. And I hope you take this to heart now, because this is the single greatest secret to a relationship. And it shouldn't be a secret. You should teach it to yourself repeatedly, review it, and teach it to your children and your friends and everyone. There was one couple who were having some trouble. So they went to the therapist, and the therapist said, you know, this is a pretty bad deal. What exactly is your plan? So the guy says to the therapist, my plan? Life's short. I'll suffer through it. Like, that's not a good plan. That's not the secret. Listen carefully. There's one point. Her wishes are my wishes. I want to make her happy. I want to understand her. I want to understand what she cares about, what she likes, and I want those wishes, I want her to know that I actually care. Very simple thing. Because generally speaking, man is a little too haughty, a little, and we have trouble with that. So here's the scenario. You just got married, and you offered you're going to do the dishes. So there you are. You offered. You're a big man. Look how good I am. And you're doing them. You get the soap on the sponge, and your loving wife, you're married all of about 2 weeks, ever so lovingly, of course, says, you are washing the dishes incorrectly. We don't put the soap on the sponge like that. We do it like this. We're like, the sponge on the soap on the sponge. I didn't know we decided that matter. And you have three options right now. Option A is domestic violence. Option B is you roll your eyes. Fine. We could have it your way. That's okay. I could do that. I'll be a man and accept it. Option C, very few people graduate to option C. Most people are still stuck in A. A few people graduate and they swallow it and they're in B. They're like, fine. And every now and then you've got the tzaddik that is ready to rise to the occasion. And he's like, dear, it would make you happier if I did it that way. I just want to make you happy. That's fine. I'll be happy to do that. We're not taking this outside. We're not getting the neighbors involved. Could you paskin? We've got a little debate here. The great story. A couple goes off to Ravari Levin, and they're sitting at Ravari Levin's table. What's the problem? Newlyweds. Well, Chaim doesn't want to take out the garbage. Don't want to take out the garbage because he says it's beneath him. It's beneath his kavod. He's a big Rosh Yeshiva. He cannot be seen taking out the garbage. And she says, this is not my job to be taking out the garbage. Me? I'm the lady. I'm scared of cats. And in Israel, you know, the garbage cats, they go to get. I cannot take out. So Ravari Levin says, I'm sorry. Chaim, are you really? Is it beneath your covet? He said, absolutely. It's beneath my, I cannot. So she said, I'm really sorry. Ma'am, you're going to have to be the one to take out the garbage. Please get ready tomorrow morning. You're going to have to be the one. Really? Really. That's my psak. At about 7 in the morning, there's a knock at their door. And lo and behold, they open the door. It's Rav Aryeh Levin. Rav, what can we do for you? Well, in my house, I take out the garbage. And I understand that you guys were having some trouble getting it to the dump, so I figured I'd help. The man figured it out real quick. The goal of marriage is that lady, she's got wishes. I just want those wishes. I want to make her happy. I want her to know I want to make her happy. The goal of tefillah is that the Ribbono Shel Olam has wishes. He wants to see the world go in a certain way. Das, knowledge. I want everyone to have knowledge of God. Refuah, I want all my children to be well. I want Hashiva Shofteinu. I want a Sanhedrin, Rabbanim for the whole world, giving proper guidance. Al Tzadikim, V'li Rishalayim, Barech Aleinu. I want everyone to have good. These are Hashem's wishes. And you call out intimately, Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm with you. I want what you want. Minyan is where that's happening. Where all of Am Yisrael is crying out together. We want what you want. And we're here together to make that statement. If I'm in my room, my living room, I'm not with Am Yisrael. I'm with Am Yisrael. With them. All those crazy people that annoy me and disturb me. I'm with them. I'm with my nation, with you. Hashem, we should all understand that which is so precious to the Ribbono Shel Olam, the ends in and of itself, to just be intimate with Him. Let's all be mitchazek, to push ourselves. It's more important to be at Minyan than it is to be at Shir. It is more important, I will say it again, to be at Minyan than it is to be at Shir. We could discuss the Be'in and the Lamdas about it. One's Chayei Shol, what's Chayei Olam Haba. We could discuss all the Lamdas. Bottom line, if we're not connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I could be a huge Talmud Chacham, at least academically. But I don't have the heart to actually connect to God or to let Him into my actual life. Let's let Him in. Let's intimately speak to Him. And bring tefillah to that level that a Kaddish Baruch Hu views it as.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.